when I was a young and wet behind the ears city staffer, and we brought the first urban energy policy into the city council in the mirror image of this chamber. And it was adopted by the city council. It was predicated then on energy efficiency as its priority, much as this plan is predicated on energy and carbon efficiency as the way to reduce carbon emissions in Portland. And that's by far the most important strategic point to be observed. I have four other quick comments, if I may make them. First, I think the most important contribution of this plan is in demonstrating how cities can leverage their special capacities for energy and carbon efficiency. Something like 70% of the people's of the people of the world now live in cities, and that's a number that's growing. Close to 80% of the energy that's consumed is consumed by or in cities globally, and about 60%, interestingly, of the greenhouse gases. So the numbers themselves describe the inherent energy and carbon efficiency of urban areas. This plan leverages compact urban form. It leverages targeted densities that are aligned with transportation strategies. It leverages multifamily housing, common wall housing, respect for the urban growth boundary. It does all of these things in order to make the best possible use of the urban form to reduce carbon production and achieve those resulting building and transportation carbon and energy efficiencies. And in response to Commissioner Novick's question about points of comparison, I think the really interesting point of comparison would be to step back, say, 10 or 15 years, draw a baseline for each one of the cities that was mentioned, and see how the city of Portland compares relative to its own baseline. I think we would end up feeling, you know, again, at least briefly, pretty good about the progress that the city of Portland has made. But we have to continue demonstrating those considerations. Second point, this plan takes on a new and a critical function that did not show up in the prior plan and that I want to underline, and that is driving down the carbon content of delivered electricity into the city by at least, they didn't say at least, but I did, at least 3% a year. The importance of doing this, I think, can be demonstrated pretty simply by us all just imagining our first electric vehicle and choosing where to plug it in. If we plug it into Pacific's territory over in northeast Portland, we'll get pretty good mileage, probably around the carbon equivalent of 35 miles per gallon. Not as good as you can get with an awful lot of internal combustion machines today. But that's what happens when you plug it into the side of a coal plant. Plug it into PGE's territory, probably between 50 and 60 miles per gallon equivalent. But if we could drive it up to Seattle and plug it into the Seattle electrical system, it would be well over 100 miles per gallon carbon equivalent. So if we're going to achieve our carbon reductions, not just in building efficiency, but also in transportation, I really strongly encourage the City Council and City Council members to leverage your position, not just as a government, but also as a large customer, institutional customer of our two utilities, to meet with those CEOs, to tell them what this goal is and what your expectations are, even more to recruit the other large institutional customers in the city, Portland State, the county, Metro, the port, OHSU, and a number of commercial customers who would also be willing to take the same line and meet collectively with those CEOs so that you're on record and on record as, in effect, setting a benchmark for our two utilities, not just for city bureaus. Third comment, this plan has rightly been praised for its attention to equity and to the consequences, equity consequences of acting on climate issues. And I just want to make one point here. That the greatest inequities will not result from pricing carbon. We frequently get pushback on that point. But as long as we are giving low-income households the tools to cope with higher energy prices, and you know what those are as well as I do, then we should be pushing carbon prices higher. The greatest inequities, and Chair Kefouri, I think, was eloquent at this point, will come from the changing climate itself, which will visit its burdens disproportionately on poor people and poor nations, as the heat wave deaths in Pakistan that the mayor alluded to earlier simply reinforce. Last comment. Climate change is not just another agenda item on the city council agenda or the state's agenda or the Congress's agenda. It is the most urgent matter before you and before the legislature and before global policymakers, as Pope Francis also underscored. We are, to put it in terms that I know at least the mayor can appreciate, we are on a boat and we have been hulled below the waterline. And we have to deal with that very large hole because we're taking in a lot of water. Doesn't mean we don't keep tending to the rigging and the sails because we have to, but we shouldn't pretend that tending to the rigging and the sails is of the same urgency or significance as closing that hole in the waterline. And in this regard, supporters of this plan and this policy, and I hope that includes this city council, should be appalled at the temporizing in Salem right now as the governor and the legislature proceed to trade away a durable carbon cap on carbon content in transport fuels in return for a temporary, a short-term gas tax fix. Both of those are necessary, but one's the hole in the hull and one's the rigging and the lines. And especially when it comes to transportation matters, city, state, and federal policies and plans are hugely interdependent. And right now, the city is moving forward, the federal government is moving forward, and I fear the state is slipping backward, and we need to arrest that backward motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Mike, welcome.
Thank you. Mayor, Commissioners, I served on the Climate Action Plan Steering Committee as a liaison from the Planning Sustainability Commission, along with Chris. Two things that the Climate Action Plan does is address both mitigation and climate preparation, and I really want to congratulate staff, in particular Michelle and Michael did a great job, and it's a concern I've had for some time, I've expressed, that we have a climate change preparation strategy that you adopted in October 2014. And one of the concerns I had is that document would be lost once the Climate Action Plan was adopted. And they did a great job of bringing forward a number of the strategies into the Climate Action Plan and have pledged to ensure that those two documents continue to inform the work that the bureaus do and the city does. There are many actions in the Climate Action Plan to help reduce CO2 through carbon sequestration and strengthening resilience, both for infrastructure and social. And I would say it's very much about the environment, very, very much about nature, ecological systems. You've already heard, you know, that it's a joint effort between the city and county. And what I would like to do, and it is in the Climate Action Plan, a direction to work with Metro. Metro has taken, in my mind, a very small step forward with their climate smart communities effort. They have a huge role to play in an issue that is truly regional, that goes beyond the city and the county. And I'm hopeful that, that your bully pulpit can be used to press Metro to get more serious about climate mitigation and adaptation. You have a letter from the Planning Sustainability Commission that conveys our unanimous endorsement of the Climate Action Plan. Again, PSC was particularly pleased to see the work that's been done on equity, and that the new plan incorporates, as I said before, key strategies to prepare for impacts of a changing climate. I would like to say I have read the Pope's encyclical, and as I said, it's both about people and the environment and nature. And in reading the encyclical, there are specific references, as there are in the Portland plan and the updated comprehensive plan, references to the intrinsic value of nature, to biodiversity, to ecosystem health, and very importantly, for us, what makes a great city that people want to live in, that have all the benefits that we've heard about, and access to nature is very high on the Pope's list of priorities, which, in fact, we could have taken an early draft of the encyclical, I think, and saved a lot of time and incorporated into the climate preparation strategy. The Planning Sustainability Commission feels very strongly the city needs to establish a fossil fuel export policy, and my colleague Chris Smith will elaborate on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chris, welcome.
Chris Smith, Mayor, members of council. I am a member of the Planning Sustainability Commission, and along with my colleague, was liaison to the Climate Action Plan Steering Committee. I want to emphasize that what we're engaged in here is a virtuous cycle of planning. So the 2009 Climate Action Plan very much informed the Portland Plan. The Portland Plan, with its equity focus, in turn informed this update to the Climate Action Plan, and they've both informed our comprehensive plan that we're updating right now. The result is strategies that accomplish more than one objective. So yesterday, Mayor, in a meeting, we talked about the youth transit pass. You know, we think of that primarily as a youth empowerment strategy supporting education. But in fact, it's a climate action strategy. It reduces our carbon footprint. Our complete neighborhoods policy improves livability by keeping people spending less time commuting, more time to enjoy their lives, makes them healthier by letting them walk and bike to more of their destinations, but also reduces our carbon footprint. So, you know, we've integrated this philosophy into our plans. That's illustrated. Last night we had a public hearing on our growth scenarios report that's essentially the scorecard that we take the plans we've created and project them into the future and say what will the results be, and we can point to the reductions in vehicle miles traveled and carbon footprint that the comprehensive plan will generate. I want to shift to the point that my colleague made about a fossil fuel export strategy. As you know, our commission grappled with an application to change zoning in order to support a very high volume of carbon exports earlier this year. It's a challenge. I mean, we enjoy kind of a unique position. You know, the ground here has soil that will grow anything. It doesn't have fossil fuels underneath. So our state has been, you know, a consumer of fossil fuels, and as a result, anything we do to reduce our fossil fuel use is essentially an economic plus. We avoid a cost. We're seeing a new pressure that, because of the geography of the Columbia Gorge, a lot of commodities want to use Portland and the Lower Columbia as a gateway to Asia, including fossil fuels. So we're going to be presented with an opportunity where we could participate in that, and then suddenly we have skin in the game where maybe global carbon reduction means we have a few less jobs or a little bit less property tax. We'd like to take on that issue front and center and come up with a fossil fuel export strategy for Portland so that we don't have to evaluate these things ad hoc, but in fact we have a plan and a strategy for how Portland is going to deal with that question. So it's a key recommendation, this plan, the task to take that on. We hope you won't duck that. Instead, you'll charge us to go do that early in this year and get that on the agenda. Thank you.
Great. Thank you all. Thanks very much. Another piece of the picture is transportation. So I next want to call Neil McFarlane, the general manager of TriMet, and Maurice Henderson from the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Welcome, Neil.
Good morning, Mayor Hales, members of the council. I did want to make a few comments. I'm Neil McFarlane, TriMet's general manager. And I want to offer you TriMet's ringing endorsement of the City and County's Climate Action Plan. As you well know, the City and TriMet have had a long history of working together to build really a great city. We've been doing that for decades, and we've created a very sound foundation for the work ahead. But as the mayor noted and as Chair Kefouri noted, the future will require even more of us. As we work toward that goal of a connected, healthy, resilient, and equitable city, we will need to link ourselves with the region's 2040 land use vision and the Climate Smart Communities vision, and we pledge our support in doing all of that. At the regional level, Metro studies have found that among our most effective strategies for carbon reduction related particularly to the transportation sectors is additional transit, transit service to our connected communities. And we know that transit's also at the center of your land use plans for corridors and active centers, and a great way to begin to accommodate the growth that we all know is coming our way. A recent example, as the mayor noted, of this partnership is 122nd, and we greatly appreciate your focus on this in your last budget initiative, where you're investing in sidewalks, on safe crossings, on a bikeable environment. And we've committed to upgrading our Line 71 service to frequent service and connect the residents of East Portland not only to more services but also to the jobs in the Columbia Corridor. And I would just note that we have been underway with service enhancement plans to begin to look at those kinds of connections and partnerships throughout our region and every sector of our region. And I think they provide a great model for how we can begin to move ahead. And I'd also note that we are developing a very strong MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, with your planning units to really make sure that we are well linked in our planning efforts as we move forward in these areas. We will improve service. We'll make new and better connections for city residents. You will advance your goals toward Vision Zero, your transportation system plans, and your comprehensive land use plan, and at the same time, we'll be doing a great job of reducing carbon emissions. I want to particularly compliment, obviously, the cover photo of the Climate Action Plan. But I would just want to make the note that the Orange Line is actually a great partnership between the city, TriMet, and many other agencies. We have transit shelters that are generating electricity. We have state-of-the-art energy recovery devices for our propulsion power of our light rail vehicles. We'll be getting more efficiency out of the whole system with LED lighting that is released throughout the system, and that only begins to touch the green elements of that project. So it's a great model of how we can begin to develop infrastructure and projects together that really do meet the goals of the Climate Action Plan. So finally, let me say that we share your vision for a low-carbon future and pledge our partnership in supporting your vibrant, mixed-use, walkable, and bikeable neighborhoods and business districts, all served by excellent, excellent transit. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you. Maurice, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. General Manager. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Transportation Commissioner Novick, Commissioners. My name is Maurice Henderson, Assistant Director at PBOT. Thank you for this opportunity to speak on PBOT's enthusiastic support for the Climate Action Plan. We've learned that the most effective transportation policies and projects are those which are good for people, the planet, and prosperity, the triple Ps or the triple bottom line. We're using this data to make smarter and data-driven, more climate-friendly decisions. To our knowledge, we are the first city in the United States to score all of our projects and programs based on their level of benefit for the climate, safety, health, equity, cost effectiveness, access to daily needs, and economic opportunity. Not surprisingly, the policies and projects which achieve high scores for climate often also achieve high scores for safety, health, equity, and the economy. Like General Manager McFarland said, I'd like to highlight the project at 122nd Street because of the great investments that we've made there. We will soon see added safe crossings, more sidewalks, bicycle facilities on that street connecting to 122nd Avenue. These improvements will support TriMet's plan to increase transit frequency on 122nd Ave. The combination of safety and access and transit improvements are designed to save lives, support healthy, connected communities, as was mentioned, and make it easier to get Portlanders to family wage jobs in the Columbia Corridor. This is also an excellent example of the Council's recent adoption of the Vision Zero plan, as well as PBOT's implementation of several strategies associated with our Portland Progress 2-year plan. The Bureau is hard at work on a fourth P, actually, as well, in partnership with TriMet, BPS, PBOT. Will soon recommend to you, Mayor Hales, and you, Commissioner Novick, a letter of intent to improve access to transit, transit frequency, reliability, and starting with two projects, growing transit communities and enhanced transit corridors. In a few minutes, you'll hear from Widmer Brewing. Both the brewery and the pub are located in places with great access to rail, bicycle facilities, and safe pedestrian crossings. Serving businesses and multiple travel options is good for both consumers, employees, our sustainable objectives, and our economic vitality as a community. Finally, achieving the Climate Action Plan's transportation goals depends on implementing a mix of cleaner vehicles, cleaner fuels, and greater use of transit options. The Obama administration has issued rules that will substantially improve vehicle efficiency. The city and our partners are updating our TSP to deliver those healthy, complete, and climate-friendly neighborhoods. And the third leg of the stool is the state delivering on the clean fuel standards, which is the subject of debate down in Salem right now. All three are needed for the region achieving our goals. Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, again, thank you for this opportunity. and for leading the way for the city in its efforts to make sure that the planet's health is a major priority for our public service.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Maurice.
Well, Neil, before you go, you have built us a beautiful bridge, which is why it keeps showing up on covers of documents, because it proves that we can build a beautiful thing as a public work, and that's a good thing to remember. But, of course, from a climate standpoint, this bridge is a pretty big deal, because it's the only bridge I know of, maybe the only bridge anywhere, that's going to carry three modes of transit, pedestrians, bicycles, and no cars. So if there was ever a public works statement of our values, you've built one. And I know you're getting ready for a big ceremony on September 12th, and you need to be properly dressed for that ceremony. Now, mayors get to give away ceremonial gifts when people come to town. You know, the mayor of Sapporo will come here, and there's a gift exchange. So we had Portland Garment Factory create the new ceremonial gift for Portland, and it's a tie with the image of your bridge in it. I got to present the first one to the president as he landed on the tarmac here for a recent visit, and it just seems appropriate that we make sure that you're wearing one on September 12th.
Thank you very much. I'm very grateful.
We are too. Thank you, Neil. Thanks very much. Okay, now we have some community partners ready to speak this afternoon. Rose Highbear from the Wisdom Council of Elders, Emily Barrett from Elemental Technologies, and Jonathan Fink from Portland State University. Welcome.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
My name is Rose Highbear. I'm Deghatan Dene from the Yukon River of Alaska. And although I've lived in Oregon since about 1949, we have for 14,500 years lived on the Yukon. We have relatives among the Siberian and the Mongolian, and all of our people have experienced climate issues over thousands of years. And so I'm very happy to be participating today as a result of that. As a Native community in Portland, we're very interested in sharing our perspective on climate issues. And so we have just returned from Alaska. Over the last several years, where we produced two documentary films and two radio programs on climate issues from the perspective of Native people. We were just funded by National Endowment for the Arts to produce two more films. One is on the Portland metropolitan Native community and its perspective on climate issues. The second film in the radio program is focusing on the four coastal tribes of Oregon. So we've been participating for some time, 50 years. There have been unprecedented climate issues in Alaska. We've been observing them. We're on networks, Native networks and non-Native networks. We're constantly observing all of the news that comes through. And so we got to participate in the review of the Climate Action Plan a couple of years ago, and we are very honored to be on that team, by the way. We really appreciated our relationships with the city and the county. They were very open to our comments. They were very collaborative in nature. They made great partners. The partnerships have continued into other projects that are very climate-related. And so we are getting ready to – we're just forming a Native Climate Council. And it's probably going to be beyond Portland throughout the state of Oregon, because we're selecting the elders, scientists, and other community members that are going to be in the films and the radio programs. And so we're just organizing that, and we'll be producing that over the next year. We tend to produce films that are very positive in nature because of the very seriousness of the films themselves, climate issues. Every one of us has lost a loved one in our ancestry to starvation or to weather issues. And so we know that. It's in our DNA. We're very connected with this issue. And we do want to be able to share our perspective because we think it's very valuable. You know, the prophecy tells us that Native people, there will come a day that people will want to listen to the opinions of Native people in the way that we care for the earth and the way that we care for one another. And so that's a lot of our role. I heard it mentioned that Metro is not doing a lot about climate, and yet you may not be aware that they are very involved restoring the natural areas of Portland. And we, as a contractor to them, Wisdom Workforce has just formed and is a contractor restoring native species to the natural areas of Portland, and so they're doing a lot more than perhaps people are aware. So I just want to say that we have very good relationships with the city, with the county, several city, Portland Parks and Recreation, Portland Planning Sustainability, Portland Parks, and perhaps the Portland Water Bureau. So we're planning on moving forward. Our nonprofit focuses on race reconciliation. We move forward in a very positive manner with the agencies and other partners that we have. So we look forward to working with you in the coming years.
Thank you. Same here. Thank you very much. Jonathan, welcome.
Thank you. I'm Jonathan Fink. I'm Vice President for Research at Portland State University, and I'm here to express the university's enthusiastic support for the Climate Action Plan. Our motto at the university is let knowledge serve the city, and really no issue demonstrates that better than this plan. I just wanted to mention three ways that Portland State is connected with the preparation and the implementation of this plan. We graduate more students that will be current and future citizens of Portland than anywhere else, and we make sure that they all are exposed to sustainability as part of their education so that they will understand how this kind of plan can work. We're one of the largest employers in Portland, and through our operations and transportation and energy and so on, we're doing what we can to help mitigate the climate change that we're all concerned about. And finally, the research area, we've been doing a number of projects with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to look at what the various actions actually require and how well they're going to work. And working with BPS, we were able to get funding from the Bullitt Foundation to support this work, which is being conducted by our faculty and our students under the guidance of BPS. This is a really nice model that we're now trying to replicate with other parts of the city. Finally, PSU is able to attract some really good faculty and students, not because of our reputation as a world-leading university and not because of our salaries and certainly not because of our football team. We're able to attract them because of the location that we're in. And activities like the Climate Action Plan really demonstrate why PSU is in Portland and how much value we get out of this partnership. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Jonathan, I thought you attracted people because of your slogan, Vim Vivel, filling the Vikings with vim and vigor.
That's exactly it. Right.
That's it, for sure. Welcome.
Thank you so much. My name is Emily Barrett, and I'm a community ambassador at Elemental Technologies. Glad to be here to talk about our excitement around the Climate Action Plan. We're a software startup headquartered and founded here in Portland. We have 233 employees worldwide, and about 170 of those are in Portland, including our entire engineering department. We're the leading supplier of software-defined video solutions for multi-screen content delivery. Which means in everyday language that our software creates the type of video files and video streams that allow you to watch video on a computer, a tablet, or a smartphone so that you don't have to watch video on TV. We're one of the top companies in the world that does this work. We have over 600 customers, including ESPN, HBO, and the BBC. And while Elemental provides the kind of high-wage jobs that today's knowledge workers seek, as a company, we're also working to live the Climate Action Plan. We provide transit passes, bicycle commute support, car share memberships, and usage for all of our employees, but we don't provide any parking at all. Our work also helps reduce one of the many hidden sources of carbon emissions in modern life. And just one example to share is that it takes about 30% less carbon to stream an hour of video than it does to watch that hour of video on DVD. The creation and delivery process for DVDs creates carbon, and there was about 1.2 billion DVDs created last year. So that's being reduced using Elemental's video processing software. Late last year, we signed the Oregon Business Climate Declaration, and along with signing, took the voluntary step of purchasing 30% of the power used at our three Portland locations as renewable under the Blue Sky program. And we didn't have to do this. We chose to illustrate the importance of taking action on climate change, to show that businesses need to lead by example. And so, yes, it costs us more for power in the short term, but the long-term investment in clean power is vital, and Portland's Climate Action Plan is going to help us prepare for the future. So I will close with saying that Elemental can't always compete with salaries in the Bay Area, but we can compete, and we win on livability. Our employees are proud to live in healthy, connected neighborhoods in a place that's leading the way to mitigate climate change effects. And I'll close with our CEO, Sam Blackman, who recently wrote, Climate change creates real risks to the livability of Portland and therefore threatens Elemental's ability to compete effectively in the global marketplace. By taking steps to address climate change now, we protect Oregon and the livability that makes Portland so attractive to the world-class knowledge workers that we need to hire. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. So next,
Before you call the next three, could I just get a time check? It's a little after 3:30. I'm wondering how many more invited testimony.
Panels, and then we'll go to
How many people signed up?
We've got 30 or 40 people signed up. Yeah.
So I have to leave at 5. I have an engagement on behalf of the city, and we have other items after. We have 10 more items after this one. Mm-hmm. So if I might suggest that we at least put the timer on for panels.
Okay, so I'll ask our panels to be very succinct.
Can I go one step further,
sure,
Mayor?
Please.
It's hard to imagine we're going to get to our regular agenda afternoon session. I mean, I'll stay here as long as necessary, but in the off chance that we can't, should we consider moving that to tomorrow at 3:30?
That's a good idea.
I don't know that we want to rush
this. I think
this.
That's a very good idea. Yeah, let's plan on that.
Because tomorrow we have a vote right off the top, and then we have rebuttal and a deliberation, so we're done in an hour.
I agree. Let's do that.
Okay. Move the regular agenda to tomorrow.
At 3:30.
PM session.
Yeah. So I will, without objection, move the remainder of today's calendar after these three items to tomorrow at 3:30.
So anybody that's here for any of the things on our calendar, pages 6, 7, and 8 listed, regular agenda, afternoon session, that'll be heard tomorrow at 3:30.
Good suggestion. Thank you. Okay. Let's hear briefly from the energy sector, Dean Funk, Sheila Holden, and Sean Penrith. Good afternoon, Dean. I think you're on first.
Oh, good afternoon, Mayor Hales, the commissioners. First thing I want to say about the action plan is a very readable plan, and it. I want to congratulate BPS on producing a really excellent plan. It's easy to understand. I think it was a very effective work product. PG serves 842,000 people in this very fertile valley, and a chunk of them here in Portland. That's probably more, there is more customers with PG energy customers than anywhere in the state. Any other utility. I'm going to, do a shortcut here. PG's been on a parallel path, often intersecting with Portland and advocating and taking action on to create a cleaner, greener energy system. We believe that our customers and our company have been integral to the actions that have been taken during the last 25 years. Angus Duncan was talking about, and others were talking about the ETO, but let's just put a finer point on who the ETO is. The ETO is the customers of PG and Pacific Power, and they contribute upwards of 3% and upwards of $70-75 million annually towards all these things that contribute to reducing carbon. So people should note that that's the utilities customers that are doing that, and Northwest Naturals too. We have a very proud track record dating back a long time. One thing, I'm cleaning my office right now, the drudgery of doing that, and when Mayor Lindbergh's name came up, I was cleaning through all these, or Commissioner Lindbergh, all these files going all the way back to him and all the stuff that we had done on climate action on some dusty old plans in the early 90s and before. But through a variety of programs that initiated by PG&E and our customers, tens of millions of avoided CO2 have resulted. This is a good number to know, also in reference to Mr. Duncan. In 2000, PG's carbon intensity was 924 pounds of CTO per megawatt hour, a metric that is now on track to reach 589 pounds in 2025 due to policies and practices that we've already adopted. There are 40 states in this country that are not going to meet that. We've already exceeded what they're going to do. As we continue to make progress, we're working hard to continue transition to a low-carbon future in ways that hold down customer costs, avoiding rate shock that damages the economy and increases cost on the people who can least afford it. We really don't want to hurt our customers, so we're very careful about that. 2 to 3 minutes, there's not a lot of time to talk about the comments or concerns that we have, but there are a few in there. A lot of this plan touches a lot of things that we do very positively, and electric vehicle charging being one of them. We're hoping pretty soon here to have a new electric avenue right in front of our building at the World Trade Center. we touch on components from the economy to transportation, natural environment, and more. Just one last thing I want to say.
Why don't you mention the things that you're concerned about in the plan? So.
Well, what I want to really say, and because there's things to talk about in detail, is the main message I have for today is we have a level of technical expertise and a record of accomplishment in carbon reduction that few other organizations can match, and we're asking you to take advantage of our expertise. And my request today is, and I think I also heard it from Angus Duncan, is that we ask Susan and Michael to come and meet with us and our executives, and that we make that a regular practice. I won't go through the rest of the comments, but just to say that electrification of the economy is integral to achieving the goals of carbon future, and that's a great place for us to be.
Good. Thank we you. Look forward to working with you. Thank you. Appreciate that offer to work with them. Sheila, welcome.
Good afternoon. In the interest of not going over my time limit, I've already timed myself, and it'll take me 7 minutes to read all the stuff that I have here. So I'm going to just do a quick highlight. The critical piece for us is that we serve about 74,000 customers in North Northeast Portland, downtown Portland. We serve 560,000 in the state of Oregon. Our goal has always been to provide safe, reliable, affordable energy to our customers. We've been known as innovators, whether it comes to customer service, whether it comes to reliability, whether it comes to renewable energy. We have been on the forefront of energy efficiency. We were the ones who came up with the idea of demand-side management. So we have a commitment to the environment. It's a core part of our value system as a company. What we are hoping that we're going to be able to do is keep in alignment with where the city of Portland is heading, where the rest of our customer base is heading in terms of wanting to have a clean, reliable energy future. And in order to do that, it means that we have to make good decisions. We have to make practical decisions on how to do that and not have it have a negative impact on the cost of doing business for our customers who are in business or for the residential customers who are having to pay for their power source. So one of the main concerns that we have is that as we look forward to what's happening in the federal arena around pricing, carbon pricing, that we are not going to end up in a position where there will be an additive cost by acting more quickly here in Portland than we're seeing happening on the national level. So we're wanting to work with you very closely to address all the things that you're working on and that we've been working on to make sure that Portland and the rest of Oregon has a clean energy future, but do it in a way that is going to be advantageous for our economy, our low-income, and vulnerable communities.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Sean, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Sean Penrith. I'm the Executive Director for the Climate Trust. We're an NGO based in Portland, and we invest in climate reduction projects across the country. In the 10 years that I've been in Portland, I've seen Portland firms do a marvelous job at being early adopters of high-performance and low-carbon products and services. But they need a supportive policy environment to advance this. Climate Action Plan is a good plan. It offers a tremendous business opportunity and a business case. One of the emerging elements that can be harnessed or leveraged is the growth in green bonds. Green bonds are ideally suited for carbon infrastructure development projects like energy efficiency, transit options, electric vehicle infrastructure, smart grid, green spaces, anaerobic digesters, rural and urban forestry. These are all the elements that are needed to develop an equitable, low-carbon economy. Climate bonds typically mature in the 5 to 10 years, which is absolutely perfect for low-carbon project development, and these bonds that are issued currently offer a very low coupon or interest rate at around 0.5% to no more than 4%. So it's very low-cost patient capital. If we issue climate bonds at $500 billion a year between now and the next 20 years, we would still not exhaust the global demand for green bond product. The bond market this year is estimated to increase to $100 billion. Last year, it was $36 billion. It is growing tremendously. The majority of issued bonds are oversubscribed and often re-up their issuance, as we saw in California. There is very, very strong demand from institutions, insurance, and pension plan sectors. We can join the efforts of four other states, which include Washington, Massachusetts, Arizona, and Indiana, who all issued green muni bonds, and use the proceeds to fund a wide range of projects that included clean water, wind, and low-carbon buildings. Muni bonds in the U.S. are the fastest-growing sector, according to J.P. Morgan. So, securing low-cost bond finance offers this city a tremendous opportunity to fund innovation in the clean tech and low-carbon sector, and it'll provide benefits to citizens of this city for decades to come. So Climate Trust and myself really support the resolution 689. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your help in developing that. Thank you very much. Okay. A couple more panels to call. Shauna Brownstein, Julia Person, and Andrea Durbin, please. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mayor, members of the council, it's great to be here where my name is Andrea Durbin with Oregon Environmental Council, and it's refreshing to be here having this conversation about moving forward with an update of a climate action plan when we spend a lot of our time in Salem trying to get to Salem legislators to understand that we need a plan to move forward and follow through on the commitments they made nearly a decade ago to meet the state's emission reductions. I would also like to commend the city and BPS for an excellent plan. Particularly, many people have noted the commitment to equity. And the we would like to emphasize today that the commitment to equity is a very important one, and we really hope that that commitment is followed through with metrics, as others have said, and apply an equity lens in evaluating different ways to deliver upon that promise. We will be looking for where the city is prioritizing and looking for ways to help deal with the barrier we face today with providing energy efficiency and retrofits for multifamily housing and rental housing. That's an opportunity, I think, to deliver on the equity commitment. We will be looking at where the transportation investments are being made and where we're prioritizing making those kinds of decisions. That'll be another place where we're looking at how do we deliver on that commitment. I'd like to also add our support for the green bonds, and I think that that is another way where the city can look at how do we finance infrastructure and investments in lower-income communities in the Portland area. The other policy measure we'd like to see taken forward, we'd like to thank you again for adopting the energy benchmarking for the commercial sector, and we think it's a good opportunity now to start talking about how to apply that to the residential sector. It will help reduce emissions, represents about 20% of the emissions in the city, and so it's a looking for high leverage investments. That's one place that we would highlight and like to work with the city on. And we'd also like to highlight in tackling diesel emissions, diesel particulate emissions and black carbon. For many people who are not aware, the Multnomah County has the fourth largest, highest diesel particulate emissions in the country, and is a major concern that affects low-income populations in particular, and one that we hope that we can make some real progress on in the next year. So thank you very much, and appreciate your leadership and commitment on these issues.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for your leadership. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Julia Person. I'm Sustainability Director with Widmer Brothers Brewing, and I'm here to lend support from the business perspective and illustrate how business can be a strong partner with the Climate Action Plan. So Widmer Brothers Brewery is the largest brewery in Oregon, and we're expanding over the next 2 years. We're committed to growing in a responsible manner. Being in the brewing industry, it's very energy intensive, and water is one of the key ingredients of beer. So we have a direct line of sight on the impact we can make on our local and community and make on the environment. So as mentioned in our 2014 annual sustainability report, greenhouse gas emissions will be one of the biggest issues facing the brewing industry in the coming years, the big industry for Oregon as well. So we're tracking our carbon emissions now for the first time. It's a key performance metric within our operations, and we're committed to reducing our resource usage, as we've shown through signing the Oregon Climate Declaration through the help with the Oregon Environmental Council. And we've also signed the National Brewery Climate Declaration alongside 24 other breweries, which recognizes the climate impacts on this industry. And it's a call for action, recognizing that it's also an economic opportunity. So we know that our sustainability efforts from our business perspective are a win-win. We're lowering our environmental impact at the same time as lowering our operating cost. And in the past 2 years, we've avoided nearly $1 million in utilities costs through our actions and reducing carbon emissions. So we definitely support the Climate Action Plan. We'll continue to do our part alongside the city and the county, and we really enjoy brewing beer here.
Thank you. Yeah. And we're glad you do. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're especially grateful that you're such a good customer of the Portland Water Bureau.
Yes, we are a good customer.
Thank you both. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Sounds like Shauna may not have made it, but let's have Michael Hanna, David Yudkin, and Jenna Garman. Welcome. Go ahead.
Hi there. My name is Michael Hanna. My family and I own a retailer at 24th and Sandy Mattress Lot. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today. I may not agree with every idea proposed by council, but when it comes to sustainability, my family, our employees, and I are in full alignment with the values and goals of Portland's Climate Action Plan. As a small business owner, CAP aligns with our own sustainability goals and vision. Strong environmental stewardship is good for business in Portland. We see it every day. Our customers choose to do business with us because we are committed to sustainability. Our customers love the sustainability gold certification we received from the city just a few weeks ago. Thank you, Paul DeBlock, for your guidance. This is good for business. Our company's sustainability vision reads like a page from CAP 2015. Most of our products are locally sourced. Our innovative mattress recycling and donation program kept 70,000 pounds of waste out of landfills last year. We offer discounts to customers who arrive by bike and by TriMet. Future plans include solar panels and eventually energy-efficient lighting. We believe that CAP will heighten Portland's brand as an international sustainability leader, and we believe that this is good for business. I'm going to leave you with one area that I urge you to keep in mind. I'm a Meals on Wheels volunteer at the amazing, beautiful East Portland Community Center. Our clients include the most financially vulnerable of our city, and I know that CAP includes terrific long-term plans for East Portland, which I fully endorse. However, I just want to make sure that Council keeps in mind any potential costs that may be incurred by financially stressed people living in East Portland, especially when it comes to rising housing costs, rising fuel, rising water costs, and rising public transit costs. Please be sensitive to how these potential costs may impact residents of outer East Portland. Please know that my wife, Mary Ruth, and I consider it a privilege to do business here in Portland, a city which cares so deeply about sustainability. We are grateful to be here today with so many business and community leaders to offer our support to the Climate Action Plan.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Mayor Hales, City Council members. My name is Carrie Hearn. I'm the Oregon Business Partnerships Manager for Climate Solutions here in Portland, and I also served on the steering committee for the 2015 Climate Action Plan update. Climate Solutions is a regional nonprofit working to accelerate practical and profitable solutions to global warming, and we've been working in this area for over 15 years, working to implement energy efficiency, renewable energy, and carbon reduction policies that demonstrate that clean energy and broadly shared economic prosperity can go hand in hand, and this Climate Action Plan reflects the bold leadership and thoughtful attention and fair and effective solutions that we also believe in. So we strongly support the city in adopting and implementing the CAP, the Climate Action Plan, and we especially support the city's commitment to equity and the plan's action calling on the state of Oregon to establish a carbon price, and we're also in support of the resolution on green bonds. The plan's reduction targets for carbon emissions reflect what is necessary to minimize the severest risks of global warming. These targets are consistent with the state of Oregon's greenhouse gas reduction goals and demonstrate the metropolitan region's commitment as well. The plan positions Portland businesses for further growth and success in a changing world. The plan acknowledges that the transition from fossil fuels involves the creation of new jobs and economic development, particularly in energy management, renewable energy, and sustainable products and services. Noting the commitment to equity, ensuring measures to address the underlying social and economic issues in our region. It prioritizes investments that create jobs and benefits low-income populations and communities of color. And implementing these equity goals will mean actively involving diverse communities in the development of climate programs, and it means establishing goals for every resident to have access to things like affordable housing and transportation, parks, schools, and more. There are two important areas that demand further attention. The first relates to fossil fuel export. Climate Solutions supports the city's opposition to coal export, and we commend you on that. And we also look forward to working with you further on other proposed fossil fuel export infrastructure. The second relates to the accounting for the cost of carbon pollution. So we join the city in calling for a statewide carbon price implemented through either a carbon cap or a tax, and that is called out in the plan as an action item to occur before 2020. So the plan can serve as a working model for our city, but it also can be replicated in cities and areas across the country and across the world. So kudos to the city staff and all of the stakeholders for creating an inspiring plan with a 2050 vision and action-oriented programs that our community can work on to reach those goals. And congratulations on your invitation to visit the Pope Francis in the Vatican.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Mr. Yudkin, you get the last word of our invited panel. So
thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to address City Council. My name is David Yudkin. I'm the co-owner of Hot Lips Pizza. And I'm proud that for over two decades, Portland has been a leader on the most pressing issue of our time, which is greenhouse gas emissions and climate change. The focus on consumption in the CAP plan, in particular the carbon footprint of food and food waste, is particularly important, drawing the attention to its impact on our environment. Somewhere between 20 and 50% of the food that is grown and processed in the U.S. is wasted, largely at the consumer level. Undervaluing of food and the issue of food waste are topics that are simply not on the radar of many Americans, even those who consider themselves to be foodies, environmentalists, or are cost-conscious. Encouraging the consumption of less carbon-intensive foods will be new to many. The focus on reducing food waste will bring immediate cost savings to those to both businesses and consumers. Hot Lips is committed to local purchasing and promoting of our local food economy, and that it remains strong. Our recent switch to mostly meatless Mondays may be small in the big picture. However, this change has spurred discussions about the impacts of meat consumption on our city, society, and environment. For conversations that are sparked are worthwhile and necessary. Portland is a city of innovators, and we are leaders in the nation in sustainability and food, and it's up to us to make the bold decisions that will someday become the norm. Together, we are leading the way. They say we're keeping Portland weird. I say we're taking the next logical step in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Dave, I can't resist on behalf of my kids. You know, we grieve the loss of Pal Shanty in my neighborhood, but we are thrilled that you've replaced them.
And thank you so much.
We now have Hot Lips, so.
Thank you.
Thanks I didn't know about mostly meatless Mondays. That'll give me yet another excuse to go. And thank you for your partnership with the Timbers Army. Much appreciated.
Cheers.
So before we move into the rest of the testimony list, I want to bring Michael up quickly and just have him describe these two amendments that have been put before us, and we can put them under consideration. So when people testify, they want to talk about those, they can.
Great. So you have, I think, in front of
yes.
you an amendment that would do two things. One is to add an action on, I believe it's page
80.
Thank you. That would work with school districts to make it easier for students to attend schools that they can safely walk or bicycle to. So there are questions of school boundaries to be dealt with, but this is something we would work together with the districts on. And so it was a suggestion that came from Commissioner Saltzman's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just felt that notwithstanding heated arguments about school district boundaries, there's a lot of people driving their kids to schools. And we need to really be cognizant of that and realize what an impact that has on congestion and carbon emissions and everything else, and so it's something that's meritorious of being included in our policy. So that's why we offered that language.
Okay. So can I ask a question of the sponsor on this? On the face of it, there's no one could possibly be against this unless it works against an equity goal of the district. So the reason some families have to drive their children somewhere else is they have opted out because they have a right to a failing school under federal law or some other choice. So I assume we're not suggesting we weigh in on that fight, and we're simply talking about where the boundaries are drawn, create as many opportunities for walking and biking.
Yes.
Okay, so Commissioner Saltzman moves this amendment that says work with school districts to increase the number of students who attend schools within safe walking or bicycling distance of their homes, adjust the numbering of the subsequent actions in the chapter to reflect that addition.
Second.
Further discussion about adopting that amendment for discussion?
So I am interested in the amendment. It weighs into school board purview and also school choice and where the better schools are.
Yeah, I heard that concern from Commissioner Fish, too. I guess my reading of this is we're going to work with the school districts like we do on lots of other things because we negotiate with them on a lot of issues. So I understand they have prerogatives about how they set boundaries. We have a goal when we have a program already of trying to get kids to walk to school and take safe routes to school. The more practical those routes are, the more likely kids will use them and that mom or dad won't drive somebody to school. So I think it's a meritorious idea, understanding that they still have some prerogatives about how they follow federal mandates and set boundaries.
Commissioner Fritz, I share your concern. So I view this more in the nature of looking at safe routes to schools, having proximity be in the discussion, but not to interfere with some of the equity policy discussions that are going on, which are providing choice to parents in underperforming schools, because I think that would be counterproductive.
Could we insert who can attend schools within safe walking distance or bicycling?
Who can attend? Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay, sure.
So in other words, that really addresses our responsibility to provide sidewalks and safe routes to school.
That you regard that as a friendly amendment, Dan?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good point. All right. Then further discussion, let's just vote to include that amendment, and we'll hear if others agree or disagree with it. Roll call on that amendment, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you. Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And then the second one is about, it looks fairly technical in nature. You want to walk us through that one?
Sure. So this has come about as a result of public comments we got expressing concern about life cycle emissions of natural gas and emissions associated with extraction, processing, transportation, et cetera. In reviewing the proposed final climate action plan, Northwest Natural brought to us some information about improvements they've made in the local gas distribution system, where they have, by the end of this year, they will have replaced every bit of the cast iron and bare steel pipe. So they really have invested strongly in all but eliminating local fugitive emissions of methane. And so we wanted to reflect that here because it's a great example for other gas utilities around the country. So we thought it was appropriate to reflect that, and it was new information that we didn't have in the earlier draft. So this sort of rewrite of this paragraph tries to capture that.
Okay, and so the language says this climate, the revised language says this climate action plan accounts for decreased carbon emissions from a shift from fuel oil to natural gas for home heating, although recent national studies suggest that the life cycle emissions from both oil and natural gas may be greater than previously understood. Northwest Natural's Portland area distribution system is one of the tightest in the nation and will have replaced 100% of its cast iron and bare steel pipe by the end of 2015. The city and county will continue to monitor research on life cycle emissions and advocate for policies that promote lowest carbon fuel options. Those are a second to that amendment.
I actually have a question about the deletion of the sentence, fugitive emissions from natural gas extraction or a continuing emissions source. It seemed to me that this amendment was largely talking about distribution, and extraction is a different thing. So I was wondering if those two things, I mean, why is that sentence being deleted as part of this amendment?
I think the intent was to reflect the full life cycle. So we still have the wording in there around the thing that matters here is life cycle emissions, not just for natural gas, but for whichever the fuels we're talking about. And so I think the intent was to let life cycle capture that
reflect the specific improvements in the distribution system. That was the end.
Okay. Not that we don't care about the fugitive emissions, but it's absolutely captured in the life cycle view. Okay. Other questions? So roll call on accepting that amendment.
I'm sorry, who moved and seconded?
Oh, did we get a second? I'm sorry.
Second.
All right, thank you.
And who moved?
I moved it.
Thank you. Fish? So.
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, again, and folks, we've got copies of that. If you want to comment on those amendments when you testify, please do.
Actually, Mayor, as long as we're on the subject of Northwest Natural, can I ask Michael a question?
Sure.
Northwest Natural sent us a letter where they also expressed sort of a generic concern that they said in a previous draft of the plan, there was a reference to the fact that other things being equal, natural gas is less carbon intensive than oil or coal. And they expressed a concern that language like that had dropped out of the final version of the plan. Now, I know actually that there are parts of the plan, for example, where it says that natural gas is preferable as a vehicle fuel.